You say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want it to be.
Hello everyone and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo and oh man, do we have another great show. Oh gosh, you're going to love my guest. His name is Steve Curtin. The book, oh, it's called The Revelation Conversation. Now listen, I'm going to just tell you something. All right, I know that a lot of people, a lot of you who listen to this show are in management or your owners or CEOs or your founders, and you're all over the world. And by the way, thank you, because you watch this show. You know, we're available to 250 million homes around the world, and now we've been added to 60 cable companies across Europe and US. So yeah, I appreciate you watching, and I know that some of you get back in touch with me and say, hey, you know, I'm this manager, I'm the CEO, or I'm the supervisor. Let's be honest here. We are living in a very bizarro world when it comes to employees. One of those bizarro worlds, it's a thing that's going on right now. It's called quiet quitting, right? You know what quiet quitting is? If you don't know, let me bring you up to speed. Quiet quitting is that we have employees who are doing just enough to not get fired. They're not engaged with their work, are they? Right? And they just do enough. But that's not what makes us productive. That's not what gives us meaning and impact in our life. It certainly doesn't for us as the owner, founder, management, supervisor. But more importantly, clearly the employee is lacking that meaning and that purpose in their job. What if you could find a way that you could bridge that gap? What if there was a conversation or several conversations that you could have one-on-one that could change that whole direction? Maybe find them a new direction. See what I did there, right? Well, that's what Steve Curtin is going to talk about in this book, The Revelation Conversation. It's brilliant. It's fantastic. Listen, I love this book. I'm just telling you, I have dog-eared it. I have highlighted it. I have taken notes on it. You're going to love it. Before we get to him, though, let's do what we do every week, right? I walk you through the four areas of your life, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. We are four-part people. And the truth of the matter is we need to be working on all four of those parts, right? I mean, because the fact is we don't stay static, right? I had a workout today, and I realized how hard my workout was today. And I'm like, you know, every day it just seems to get harder and harder and harder, which means I got to keep working. Because if I don't work out, if I'm not taking care of my body, guess what happens, right? It goes backwards. It doesn't go forward. And it doesn't stay the same. The truth of the matter is if we aren't working on these four areas regularly, what happens is we're not growing, we're dying. All these areas. So here's how we do that. On a scale of 1 to 10, what we do is I ask you, okay, if you think about your training in each one of these areas, how would you rank yourself? 1 being miserable, 10 being outstanding, 5 being average, physically, like, and then think about this way, exercise, diet, drinking enough water, getting enough sleep, doing your checkups, right? How would you rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, right? Now listen, whatever that number is, that's okay, okay? The point is, you now know the number, then you've got to start looking at, okay, what can I do right now to start changing that number to move up? And you don't, we're not trying to go from a 3 to a 10. Let's just get from a 3 to a 3.5, all right? Whatever you need to change. It could be something so simple. Maybe it could be like, you know, a bag of chips that you need to be getting rid of, you know, and not eat them. Maybe it's a soda, you know, or something else. Maybe it's taking a walk because you've been sitting all day and you're not giving yourself any exercise. Maybe it's as much as getting to bed a little earlier, right? What can you do right now to change what you're doing? Okay, so that's your first number. Second number is your intellectual number or your mental number, right? You know, intellectually, you can't sit on the couch and let things come at you and think that you're just going to change. No, you have to be an active participant in your learning and your learning growth, right? And we have two halves of our brain. We have a right side of our brain, which is more of our creative side, and we have a left side of our brain, which is more of a logic side. So we need to be working both halves. You know, you can't just be sitting and working on numbers, 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 and think that you're going to be healthy. No, you got to be working on some creativity as well, right? And there's a lot of ways to do that. You know, here's another great way. Read a book. That exercises both halves of your brain. Take up a new instrument. Learn a foreign language. There are so many ways that you can be an active participant in your intellectual growth. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate yourself? Okay, there's your second number. Third number is the emotional number, right? And we make it really simple on the show because we could go into Daniel Goleman's, you know, whole intellectual intelligence and emotional intelligence piece. But here it is. First one is on how would you rate yourself being able to control your emotions under stress and pressure? Like when somebody cuts you off in the middle of traffic, or you have to stand in line a little bit longer at the grocery store, or you're hungry and tired and somebody wants one more thing. And then the second part is how well are you able to actually listen and understand and tap into the emotions of another person? By the way, it's so critical when it comes to the revelation conversation. You have to be an active listener. You have to understand where they're coming from. It's critical, right? So on scale 1 to 10, what's your number? And then finally, the last number is the spiritual number. And by the way, we're all spiritual. If you remove the physical, intellectual, and emotional, what you have left is you probably have the spiritual. We all walk by faith, right? You went to bed last night not knowing if the sun was going to come up tomorrow, but it did. You kind of count on it, but truth is you have faith. When you put your key into the car and you turned it forward and the engine turned on, you believed it would. You don't think about it, but you really did believe it did. When you drank that coffee, you believed it wasn't poisonous. When you stepped off the curb, you know, and the sign said walk, you believed that the people were not going to run you over. Every day we walk by faith. And then you have to ask yourself this other question. What do you run to when life seems to go south? When it seems to like go off the rails, what do you run to? For some people, you know, meaning what brings you joy and peace in the midst of chaos? For some people, that is God. For some people, that's meditation. For some people, it's nature. Some people, it's something else. Two questions. Is it working and what do you got to do to make it work better or change it? Right? So now you have these four numbers, right? Those four numbers are like the air in the tires of your car. If one of the tires in your car, air is too low, what happens to the car? It veers or it doesn't roll right. What if all four tires are really low? What happens? The car is not efficient. It's not productive. It's working way too hard, right? And if two of them are low, we don't know what kind of disasters can happen, right? So the whole point is we want to fill up the air of our tires to the right level, right? So that our vehicle, ourselves, runs smoothly and as efficiently as possible. And speaking of someone who does that, his name is Steve Curtin. And Steve Curtin is a globally known expert and speaker on customer service management and leadership. He's ranked fourth by Global Guru in its listing of the top 30 customer service experts in the world. He is the author of The Revelation Conversation, Inspire Greater Employee Engagement by Connecting to Purpose. And of course, his best-selling book, Delight Your Customers, a fantastic book, by the way, 7 Simple Ways to Raise Your Customer Service from Ordinary to Extraordinary. I may have to bring him back to have him do that show. After a 20-year career with Marriott International, Steve now devotes his time to speaking, consulting, and writing on the topic of connecting work to purpose. He lives in Denver with his wife, 4 children, and a golden doodle named Nugget. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show for the first time. Welcome to New Direction, Steve Curtin. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you very much, Jay. Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. So the book was fantastic. So let's just dig in and let's give people flavor for the book. So there was this kind of interesting experience that you had in the introduction. And you handed out these 3 cards to these leaders, 222 leaders that were in attendance. Mm-hmm. The first card, you asked for the company corporate mission. And only 4 out of 222 could accurately recall it. 34 of them left it blank. What was going on there in your mind when you saw that number?
Well, it was interesting. I didn't see it at the time. I had talked with my client leading up to the event, and the event was a leadership event. 222 senior leaders from around the country were flown into Chicago. We were at an airport hotel. And before I began my presentation, I'd contracted with my client to distribute these 3 index cards, the first of which asked them to record, as you said, the organization's single sentence corporate mission statement without the use of their smartphone, without the use of the colleagues seated next to them. They had to do it on their own. And I'd asked my client beforehand, I said, how many will know the single sentence corporate mission statement? He said most. Mm. And to your point, only 4 knew it verbatim, and that's less than 2% of the 222 in attendance.
That blew me away, that we have these leaders. These are leaders. they can't even recall it, right? Okay, you can maybe forgive the employee, right? But these are the people who are supposed to be leading your mission. Right. And they can't do it. So what's the culture? That's the thing that got me, Steve, was I started thinking then, well, then if you don't even know the mission, then what's the culture?
Well, the culture, is that a rhetorical question or can I respond?
No, I want you to respond to that because that's what I mean, because that's what seems to be nagging at me.
Well, the culture is one of transactions and transactional customer service. I can tell you that. Mm. Because without a true north, without an understanding of mission, vision, purpose, regardless of what you call it, without familiarity with core values, not just what they are, but how our organization interprets them, and even further, how we apply them in terms of how we actuate them, how we behave them into existence in our real world of work and in our decision making. In the absence of all of that, all you have left are job functions, transactions, and efficiencies.
Yeah, that's what got me. It was like going, there can't be a culture. That was kind of what I was just like going, what is it? All right, the second card. You ask them to describe from their perspective, their job role, what their jobs entailed in 5 to 7 bullets. What was interesting here is 86% of the responses pertain to job functions, the duties, tasks associated with the role, and only 14% related to job essence. Help us parse that apart because that seems to be a bit concerning too, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it's not surprising. You know, we just got through talking about how they were unaware of True North, unaware of purpose and mission in the organization. And I said, what's left is job functions. And clearly, that's what they gravitated toward in their responses. Mm. So according to them, from their perspective, from their own perspective, from their own hand, recording onto the index card. So I'm not making any assumptions here. Mm. It was pretty objective. They define the totality of their job role more or less, certainly 86%, in terms of duties and tasks, in terms of budgets, utilization reports, productivity, P&L statements, the world of job function, the world of efficiencies, the world of transactions. And so the best that the frontline employees of this service organization, by the way, the best that they could hope to do would be to deliver transactional customer service to the customers of the company.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you can't really describe your role, I guess when you're, it's kind of what we do. Isn't it kind of similar to what we do as people? We go, hey, tell me about yourself, right? And the first thing we do is we describe this is who, you know, what I do for a living, not who I am as a person, right?
Yeah.
It's similar to that, right?
I think you're right.
In that
sense. We're actually multifaceted.
Right.
And at least initially when we meet someone, we may be, depending on our personality type and how comfortable we are, we may be more guarded and withhold information. In the workforce, if there is a level of trust that exists with a manager, then that frontline employee, you know, would likely be more expressive in terms of the totality of his or her job role rather than describe it merely in bullet points that could have come off a job description.
Right. All right, third index card. You ask them to record their employees, because these are leaders now, their employees' single highest priority at work. All right, before I give the people the stats on this, what were you really looking for there when you were asking for a single highest priority at work?
Alignment.
Okay. All right, so you're looking for alignment here. Here's the result. 70% of their responses pertain to job functions. Again, like card two. That's... Yeah. Where did they miss it? Did they not understand the question, or are we so focused on this is what I do, this is what I do, this is what I do?
Yeah. You know, it's ignorance, which doesn't mean stupidity.
Right.
It just means we lack information. And this is just clearly a lack of information. And so where you get the where you get the responses that are just heavily laden with job function. And when I ask for the single highest priority, by the way, I ask for one priority. I didn't say what is a priority at work. I asked for the single highest priority at work. And when you ask somebody, because I've done it, you know, you take five people with the same job title and you ask them what they do, and the lists will be 80% similar because they're in the same job role. They're competent. In other words, they possess adequate job knowledge. They demonstrate sufficient job skills. They know what to do and how to do it. They can execute job assignments reliably. So those lists will be a lot alike in terms of what do you do. When you ask that same set of five individuals individually, tell me, what is your single highest priority at work? Well, then they're going to start fishing for what they think you want to hear. And they're going to say things like, and they're all honorable. They're all admirable responses. They'll say safety. They'll say productivity. They'll say customer service. They'll say teamwork. They'll say what they think you want to hear. But the point is, the question was, what is your single highest priority at work? And that's what I asked the 222 leaders. And I got a range of responses, dozens of different responses. So I was looking for alignment, and they clearly were not on the same page.
That's so interesting, because you would think, you know, these are leaders. You'd think it would be better than 2%, or you know, because it was less than 2%. You would think it would be better than that. That's just blew me out of the water. Okay, one of the things that you talk about is that we have studies that have shown that there's positive correlation between finding meaning at work, the why, and engagement with that work. Let's talk about the importance of why engagement, because I think I opened up the show with, you know, saying that there's this thing called quiet quitting. And clearly we have some disengagement when, of course, we know the Gallup studies, but help us understand why meaning at work and engagement at work, how those relate together and why it's so essential.
Yeah, well, 64% of employees, according to Gallup, the latest set of statistics, are not engaged at different levels at work. So 15% were actively disengaged, 49% were unengaged, and only 36% were engaged at work. And, you know, the reasons, there are myriad reasons for that. Chief among them, according to Gallup, is the quality of their immediate supervisor. You know, they can determine with 70% accuracy the origin of discontent in a workforce just by spending time with the immediate supervisor. So, it's pretty clear. But so you want to ask yourself, what do we have control over in terms of if we want to move the needle and we want to increase as a percentage of our employee population the number who are engaged at work, what do we have control over? This is what I talk about in the book. What we have control over is how we present the totality of the job role. Because most employees describe the totality of their job role, as I said earlier, exclusively in terms of job functions, knowing what to do and knowing how to do it. That's job knowledge and job skills. And it's as if there is a cloak or a curtain that is shielding the top third of that Venn diagram in the book, which is job purpose. That's the other dimension of every job role. It's job essence. It's your single highest priority at work. It's why you do what you do, how you do it, or the way you do it at work. And most employees just completely lack that. And if they lack that, that's the area that's tied to meaning. That's the area that's tied to purpose. That's the area that's tied to contribution. And if you take that away, all you're left with is a transaction, execution, delivery, routine, monotony. And frankly, that's how a lot of employees would describe their jobs. It's pretty empty.
It is real empty. And it shouldn't surprise us, right? I mean, really shouldn't surprise us when we hear of things like quiet quitting. You know, I'm just doing enough to do my job, because I mean, when we feel like we're just doing a job for money or whatever it is, when it's just so, there's no purpose, real purpose that or impact or meaning to it, it's pretty empty. Like you said, it's really just emptiness. And I think what, as you know, listen, as leaders out there, listen to the show, watch the show, this is a really important question, right? Because, you know, I know that there are people, and you know these, this as well, Steve, that there are people out there who are leaders who will say, you know what, Steve, I don't care if they're engaged. I just need them to get the work done. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think that, you know, I think that you're leaving a lot of productivity on the table. I certainly think you're leaving a lot of engagement on the table. And, you know, I disagree with that approach. Mm-hmm. But what I do empathize with, having worked in management with Marriott for 20 years, in operations, in sales and marketing, in human resources, having interfaced with a, you know, number of peers, colleagues, subordinate superiors, all of which at different times of the period or the quarter or the year felt heavily taxed and burdened. And what I can empathize with is the manager who says, look, Steve, you're asking me to do one more thing. I've already been tasked with all of this. What can I take off my plate in order to manage these revelation conversations that you're prescribing? And the thing is, and you read the book, at the end of the book, I talk about, and this is not my idea, it came from James Clear's book, Atomic Habits, and that is the theory of marginal gains, or the aggregation of right. marginal gains, where if you just improve by 1% a day, you can increase your effectiveness 38% over the course of a calendar year. And that's all I'm asking, you know, these managers who are taxed, and I get it. I've been there. 1% of your day is less than 5 minutes in an 8-hour day. And I think most of us, if we're being reasonable, can suggest that, you know what, I've got 5 minutes for this very important conversation, and that's all it takes.
His name is Steve Curtin. The book is entitled The Revelation Conversation: Inspire Greater Employee Engagement by Connecting to Purpose. Isn't it awesome? It's going to get even better. You'll speak to him here on A New Direction. Hey, listen, folks, my sponsors, the show, Epic Physical Therapy, listen, they're fantastic. They will customize a treatment program that is just for you. They work with people, everyday people, and they work with professional athletes, and yet they will customize it for you. It's not physical therapy in a box. When you're looking for your epic relief, your epic recovery, your epic results, don't look any further. Go to epicpt.com. That's EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft and team, Linda Kraft Team Realtors, for over 35 years, they have been helping people all over the world sell and buy homes. Listen, when you're ready to talk to the legend of customer service, I'm just telling you, that's not what I say. That's not what she says. That's what her clients say. Talk to Linda Kraft and her team. That's Linda Kraft Team Realtors. That's go to lindacraft.com, LindaCraft.com. And Hint Water is the official beverage of DBTV. That's right. Watching us, millions of homes, watching us all over the world. Listen, this is our official beverage, Hint Water. It's fantastic. Kara Golden, who is the owner of Hint, has been on the show. I'm just telling you, it's a fantastic product. It's great water. No sugar, no calories, and you're going to love it. I promise you will. So get yourself some Hint. That's just a hint from me. And we're back here on A New Direction, and we're with Steve Curtin and his book, The Revelation Conversation. And Steve, let's just jump into part one, because you've divided the book up into parts. And the first part of the book is revealing the total job role. And I could hear people, not literally, but I can hear it in my head, saying, okay, whoa, Steve, you talked about job roles. I thought job roles were my tasks. I thought that was the stuff I do. But we're going to divide this up, could talk about this, because chapter one is entitled Purpose at Work, The Two Journeys. And you have this quote from Norman Lear, which he says, I think we're on two journeys. We're on a horizontal journey and we're on a vertical journey. What is the horizontal and vertical journey? And what is this journey that we're on, and how does it relate to job role?
Yeah, well, there are multiple journeys that we're on. We're on a personal journey. It's a personal journey of self-discovery. That's a very private, a very intimate, a very personal, a very existential journey to find the source of meaning and fulfillment and purpose in our own life. And then there's a second journey, which is more of a intellectual or a professional journey, and that's our journey into self-improvement. That's the journey that we're on at work. That's a journey that we share with colleagues at work. That is a journey that is very much accessible by others, whether it be peers or our boss colleagues, clients. It's an accessible journey that we're on. It's a very public journey. That's really the distinction between the two journeys. And the reason that I make it up front is that I have found in my reading and in my preparation to write this book that there are a number of articles and books that, from my perspective, conflate the two. And there is an expectation or an assumption that we can align one's intimate, private, personal, existential journey in life with the either the organizational purpose or the job purpose, the single highest priority of the job role. And I don't think that that is really the case. I don't think it's impossible. Mm-hmm. I think that for, especially for vocations such as the clergy, the medical field,
sure,
B Corps, you know, I think that you can find some alignment in those areas. But as you know, my background is in Marriott hotels. And I think if you're attempting to do that, you're really not making the best use of your time.
Well, I think entrepreneurs can kind of do it pretty well. But I don't think that the typical, unless you're just fortunate or your eyes are opened, because you make this statement, I'm just going to quote you. You said, the truth of the matter is most people aren't even aware of their purpose in life.
Right.
So how, I mean, what would we expect in terms of finding their purpose in their work?
That's what makes it almost laughable. One of the statistics in the book is that 25% of people surveyed claim to have articulated a purpose for their life. That's the vertical journey we're talking about. That's 25%. And I think that's heavy.
I do too.
I mean, I've written 100,000 words on the topic. I've read 500,000 words on the topic. I've thought a lot about my own a life purpose and my work purpose. My work purpose is to inspire greater employee engagement by connecting to purpose. It's also the subtitle of my book. I'm all in on that.
Right.
My life purpose, I'm not sure I've articulated it, but beyond, yeah, I've got four children, beyond raising kind, productive children that become productive members of society. Mm. I don't think that's fully fleshed out.
Right.
But, you know, my role as parent is a huge role, an enormous responsibility. But I'm not sure I've even articulated my own life's purpose beyond that. So I think to suggest that one in four have a, you know, clean, clear, articulated life purpose, it's probably closer to one in 10.
I don't even know if it's that high, honestly, because I deal with a lot of life purpose, right? Help people as well. And I talk on it and have done research on it. I'm not even sure it's that high because it is so difficult to clarify. And in your own mind, because it changes. It's not a constant target. That's the problem with life purpose. Is like, because when your kids are grown and gone, all right, what's going to be your purpose now?
Yeah.
Right? And so what now, what happened? Now what's your life purpose, Steve? Right? I mean, because I know that every juncture in my life, right, my purpose was different. You know, when I was raising my son's now 34. There's nothing I can do for him. Right? Outside of just try to be the best dad I can and offer support when I can for him at 34. Right. But he's on his own journey. And, you know, I have my wife, but my wife is different now than she was when we first got married, right? With different purpose. And so clarifying that now is so difficult because it's such a moving target. And then now, you know, we're trying to look at work purpose. And work purpose, you know, it's there. I think that's the thing that when I read this book, is I don't want people to think that work purpose is as nebulous, and I don't know if that's the right word, as life purpose. Because it's not. You can find purpose in your work. I mean, that's the whole point of your book, right?
Correct. Yeah, you have to articulate it.
Right.
And that's, I don't want to jump ahead, but when we get into chapter 3, we have those four questions, which are designed to enable the reader to articulate his or her purpose at work.
Right. I want, because of the listenership that I have, because I know I have business owners and CEOs and people who listen to the show, I just want to quote something that you said here. Organizations pay a hefty price for disengaged employees. They pay for an increased turnover, absenteeism, shrinkage, such as lost, theft, breakage, and in decreased productivity, profitability, and customer loyalty. Gallup estimates that low employee engagement costs the global economy, wait for it, people, $8.1 trillion, that's with a T, trillion dollars annually. Steve, then this becomes pretty, then engagement comes pretty important, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Engagement's critical. You know, engagement is to employee productivity what loyalty is to customer productivity in terms of recommendations, less price sensitivity, and repeat business.
Chapter two. By the way, I want to just point out to everybody that at the end of every chapter, Steve has exercises at the end of this book. I'm just telling you, they're really, really, really good. I mean, they will get you thinking. They will get you moving in the right direction. So at the end of each chapter, it's absolutely fantastic. So I really encourage you, when you purchase the book, do the exercises. It's going to make a huge difference for you. And it doesn't matter, by the way, where you're at in the chain of command. I'm just telling you, it's going to be eye-opening for you. And I wanted to point that out because this is more than just a book to read. There's actually things that he's got you doing here as well. In chapter two, entitled The Anatomy of a Job Role, one of the first things that you, of course, I could talk about Dunning-Kruger all day because as a psychological professional, I'm a psych geek. I could do that all day. But the big issue is you have a subtitle that says, being competent is not enough. And yet we want to rely on competence, don't we, as being professional and successful?
Right. Yeah, it's not enough because if you possess adequate job knowledge and you can demonstrate sufficient job skills, you can now reliably execute assigned job responsibilities, and by extension, you're competent. But that leaves out job essence. All of that is job functions. So that leaves out your single highest priority at work, which is the purpose of your job role, which is why you do what you do the way you do it at work.
Okay, so let's dig into what's in a job role. All right, so I'm just going to quote what you say here. Many business leaders would agree that work is more fulfilling when employees know that what they do matters and are aware of how their daily contributions connect to purpose. So what's in a job role? So first thing you have is job functions. Okay, talk about that.
Yeah, job functions are comprised of the what and the how of the job role. Okay. So job functions would be, if I use a barista as an example, mm-hmm. most of your listeners have had experience with a coffee shop.
Oh, sure.
I won't name names, but a barista in a coffee shop, in order to be competent, he or she needs to know, for instance, how to make a macchiato. So they need to know what goes into a macchiato. That's job knowledge. And then they need to know behind the espresso machine at the espresso bar, how to make the macchiato. So they need to know what the proportions are, what the temperature is, et cetera. And if they can do that, then they can hand over a macchiato drink that has been properly made according to standard, and they have reliably executed their job assignment. That's job functions.
Okay. Next piece you have is, and let's stay with the barista, and we're not going to mention any names, but maybe it rhymes with car ducks. All right, let's go with job knowledge. Now, does that kind of fall under job functions, or how does job knowledge fit in?
Oh, job knowledge is job functions.
Okay, so it is part of the function piece. Okay, job skills, that's all part of job functions too.
It goes into a macchiato.
Okay, right, and then job skills fits into there. Then we have job essence.
Correct.
Okay, and then so help us understand what job essence is as part of the job role.
You bet. Well, job essence is your single highest priority at work. So let's say I'm working in the role of a barista, I'm at the coffee shop, and let's say my manager told me during the hiring process, during the onboarding process, I'm well aware of the totality of my job role, and I know there's another dimension, which is job essence, my single highest priority at work. And because my manager is connected to purpose, him or herself, they have made it abundantly clear that my priority is to, make a connection with each guest. Mm-hmm. So if that's my single highest priority at work, certainly I have to be competent, okay? It's not zero sum. Either demonstrate job functions or demonstrate job essence. It's not zero sum, it's both. So you have to be competent. That's table stakes. So if you've got a great personality and if you make a connection, but you hand me a drink that's been poorly made, I may not return or I may have a problem with that. So let's assume that the macchiato was properly made. And let's assume that the manager has conveyed to the barista that your single highest priority at work is to make a connection with each guest. Then maybe what that barista does, rather than just hand over the macchiato and say, here you go, which is very transactional, maybe he hands the macchiato and he says, hey, did you realize that macchiato is Italian for marked or stained? Macchiato, your espresso beverage, has been marked with a teaspoon of milk. Just by adding that little bit, and it's not taking a lot of time. We know that the barista is busy. People in the morning are busy getting their coffee. That took all of 6 or 7 seconds
maybe
to communicate that. Yeah. But in doing so, he's made a connection, whereas in the absence of that, we've only had a transaction.
I started thinking about this the barista analogy, right? I mean, it's like, my purpose in my job is to bring joy to every customer that I serve a coffee to. Does that work?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. There's not one single highest priority. It's really going to be up to the organization. Certainly. If the organization's purpose is to make a connection, that becomes the purpose of the job role. A great example of that is Disney. You know, they've got a higher order purpose, an organizational purpose, a large umbrella purpose, which is to create happiness. So regardless of what role you're in at Disney, you can fulfill that role of creating happiness. You don't have to be affiliated with an attraction or a ride to create happiness. You can be a custodian, and you can see that a park guest spilled her popcorn. We've been trained that cleanliness is not your single highest priority at work as a custodian. Sounds like it should be, but your highest priority is to create happiness. So what creates happiness? Cleaning up the spill? Not particularly if you're the guest who now lacks warm buttered popcorn. So what the custodian's been trained to do is to go replace the popcorn so that the guest has been reunited with her warm bag of popcorn and then attend to the spill. And in doing so, he's honored his single highest priority at work is to create happiness.
So I know this is not how you titled it, but it's actually works out great for me as a question. It's you have why purpose at work is so elusive, but I'm going to ask it. So Steve, tell us, why is purpose at work so elusive?
Well, it's so elusive because managers haven't taken the time to articulate it. And usually the reason they haven't taken the time to articulate it is they've been swept up, as Dr. Stephen Covey wrote in his perennial book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. They get caught up in the thick of thin things. And what I mean by that is the managers, operators, and by extension, those they supervise tend to get swept up in transactions and activities, and they lose sight of relationships and results. So effectiveness is subordinated oftentimes to efficiencies. And we work in this world of job functions, as we talked about at the onset,
where
the majority of the job role is described in terms of job functions and transactions and productivity metrics and P&Ls and budgets and forecasts. And we lose sight of the big picture, or we lose sight of our North Star.
You know, you have something in here before we close out chapter 2, the sweet spot of engagement. It says many people are underperforming, is what you said, simply because they don't know that they could be doing better or what great performance looks like.
Right.
Wow. Have we missed it that far? Have we missed the mark that far as leaders that we just, have we?
Yeah. They're unaware of what great performance looks like because they're unaware of the single highest priority at work, the higher purpose of their job role. You know, they define their job role oftentimes in terms of the bullet points on a job description. And that just sucks the life out of a job role, because now it's just been reduced to the lowest common denominator, which are transactions. and it focuses on job function and it excludes job essence, and job essence is really where the party's at.
His name is Steve Curtin. The book is entitled Revelation and Conversation. I'm telling you, it's going to get even better. I know you go, how? I'm just telling you, it's getting even better. We're about to dig deep. Trust me, we're about to go into the four questions. What? Yeah, we're going to talk about the connecting the job functions to the job purpose. But you know what? We're going to go to a break right after this. Hey, folks, Epic Physical Therapy, my physical therapist, I think they should be yours too. Listen, I just want to tell you something about them. You know what? They offer the most advanced top-of-the-line equipment, Alter-G anti-gravity treadmill, Normatec compression sleeves, Game Ready, my favorite. And then they're also certified in the most comprehensive cutting-edge treatments like blood flow restriction therapy, dry needling, cupping, and that's just a few. When you're ready for your epic relief, your epic recovery, your epic results, go no further. It's epicpt.com. That's EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft, Team Realtors. Listen, I'm going to tell you something. They don't sell houses. You know, they don't. That's not what they do. What they do is they help you transition. Think about it for a second. You know, in life's transition, if you think about every place you ever lived, it's been a transition for you, hasn't it? That's what they understand at Linda Kraft Team. They don't sell houses. They're helping you with your next life's transition, whether it's from an apartment to a house or whether you're upsizing, downsizing, buying your first home. It's all life transition. And that's what they help you do. So when you're ready to get your help for your next life transition, contact Linda Kraft Team Realtors. That's lindakraft.com. That's LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with my friend Steve Curtin and his book, The Revelation Conversation. Absolutely outstanding. I'm telling you, folks, when I mean I dog-eared this book, it looks, if I'm looking at it right now, it looks like every six pages I've got the folded over edge. I'm just telling you, it does. And I'm just telling you, it's highlighted like crazy. It's absolutely fantastic. It's eye-opening. That is what I'm going to write on the Amazon 5-star review. It is an eye-opening book, I promise you. Steve, part two, connecting job functions to job purpose. And chapter three is the four questions. So should we go ahead and just dig right into those, or do we want to set this up a little bit before we dig right into the four questions?
I'd say let's dig right in.
Okay, what is my purpose? First question, what is my purpose at work? What are we talking about here, and what do you want from us?
Well, what I want is for you to go beyond, you know, for instance, selling houses. You know?
Okay.
I'm a realtor, and I say my single highest priority at work is to sell houses. I haven't asked enough why questions. Mm. You know, why do I sell a house? Well, what we dig down to, according to Ms. Kraft, is enabling people or facilitating life transitions for people. Which is a higher order priority than the transaction of closing on a new home.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. Yeah. I once heard a story. Tell me if this relates to you, that a man goes into a hardware store to buy a drill, but he really didn't go in to buy a drill. He went in to buy a hole.
Yes.
Right. Right. I mean, it's
the end in mind.
Right, right, right. It's just, it's a little different, right? The purpose is different. I think we get caught up into the thing, right? Whereas in real estate, you know, it's not real estate for her. It's transition. It's life transition. That's what she's helping people do. It's not selling or buying houses. She's doing life transitions. It's okay. So that's my purpose at work. Okay. Second question, what values guide my actions and behaviors at work? Help us.
Yeah, so those are the core values. And for your listeners who are working for a sophisticated large organization, these already exist. So there's really not an awful lot in the way of work that you need to do to identify core values. In most cases, you just need to access the About page of the corporate website. Mm. And what you'll find oftentimes is you'll find what I refer to as an imitative list of values. And there'll be things like customer service and integrity and teamwork and, you know, the like.
You're right, because it's everybody's got the same. You feel like that way anyway, right? Like you said, customer service, integrity, quality, caring, you know, insert, you know, altruistic, I don't know, insert the word here. It just seems like, okay, we just copy and paste that. We'll just alter that order, but we'll right. use the same words.
Well, what happens is when you take those imitative sets, you can actually find your competitor and take their values, remove the company logo and all identifiers and put them side by side and ask your employees which set of values belongs to who. Oftentimes they couldn't tell you. And that's because we've identified the value, but we haven't taken it to the next step. Like, these are all honorable values.
Right.
I don't really make fun of customer service sure. or integrity as a value. It's a worthwhile value. And if it resonates with your organization, if it resonates with your culture, terrific. Then that becomes your core value. But it can't just be the core value. You have to take it a step further, and you have to say, how does our organization interpret that value? Mm. And that becomes a value statement. This is how we interpret the value. And then you ask another question. You say, behaviorally, what does this value look like? How do we actuate this value? Mm. How do we make it come alive in our behaviors and our actions and our decision-making at work? And so what you have is you have a set of core values. You have an interpretation or a value statement of how your organization interprets that value. And then on the other side of that, you have the behaviors. This is what the value looks like in action in our daily world of work.
You know, I think there's another inherent danger when I'm listening to what you're saying here about, you know, when we copy and paste these values, because chances are you're not living by them. If you're just copying and paste them. And I it makes me often wonder if we're not living by those values, then what culture do you actually have, right? Because supposedly the values are supposed to make up the backbone of the culture. And if we just copy and pasted somebody else's values because we like them,
right?
How are they being lived out, really?
Right.
Which is kind of the question that you ask here, but then it's a bigger problem if the company isn't really clear on what the values are they espouse. Not the right. ones that they say, but the ones that they live out, because it would be harder to get to the employee from there, right?
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. You need to make the connection.
Right.
You know, otherwise it's just like I said, it's this imitative or performative list. The example that I have in the book, I know you've read this, but for the benefit of your listeners,
sure.
The illustration I use in the book is Pfizer. Pfizer has a purpose statement that reads, to deliver breakthroughs that change patients' lives. Mm. And it was particularly relevant as I wrote this book during the height of the pandemic. And Pfizer had the first to market vaccine, a COVID-19 vaccine. And in researching Pfizer and their purpose statement and their values, I came across the set of values: courage, excellence, equity, joy. I won't go through all of these.
Right.
They did an excellent job, because alongside equity, they said, this is how we interpret equity. Mm. We believe that every person deserves to be seen, heard, and cared for.
Right.
And then along behaviors, it says, this happens when we are inclusive, act with integrity, and reduce healthcare disparities. Mm. Well, you know what they did? They actually, when they were pricing the COVID vaccine, the COVID-19 vaccine, they priced it at the cost to distribute it to low-income countries. Mm. And they did that to reduce the healthcare disparity and to honor the value of equity.
Mm. And isn't that something? That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, we could go down that rabbit hole all day, Steve. I know we could in values and that, because it just strikes me that sometimes, and listen, CEOs, founders, owners, companies, entrepreneurs who are building a company, listen, if your values are not clear, and if you just copy paste them, you need to be really clear, because it's going to be hard to get your employees to help them find their purpose. All right, next question. Of the four questions, we've got two. Number three, what purposeful actions and behaviors do I exhibit at work?
And I sort of combine that when I said we have the list of values, mm-hmm. and then we explain them in terms of how we interpret them at work. And then the actions and behaviors in response to question three are really that third column. Okay. How do we actuate in terms of actions, behaviors, and decision making?
Okay. So then let's move to question four. What is my team's aspirational goal? Oh, Steve, you're asking a big ask here. This is a big ask.
Yep.
Because I know this isn't an easy question. I don't think it's not an easy question.
Yeah. Well, it's a question that you need to think about. And you need to think about what is our aspirational goal? What is our end in mind? You know, this type of goal describes a desired eventuality. It speaks to the pursuit of an ideal future state or destination. So it's not like a KPI. It's not something that's quantifiable, measurable. It's not something that we're going to attain next quarter, but it's really going to serve as our aspirational team goal, maybe apart from the higher purpose of the organization.
Okay, so now is where we introduce the revelation conversation. And let's talk, go ahead and walk us through, because this is where now the rubber meets the road. We've asked the four questions, we've answered them, and it's what everybody's been chomping at the bit for, going, okay, well, what is this revelation conversation? And chapter four is initiating the revelation conversation, but help us understand what it is.
Yeah, right. So you've got, it's the cornerstone chapter of the book, and it's chapter four. So you really need to read through chapters 1, 2, and 3 mm-hmm. and respond to those exercises that you referenced earlier, in order to gird yourself and prepare yourself to initiate a revelation conversation. Because in the absence, you can't like jump ahead to chapter four and say, okay, I'm gonna initiate a revelation conversation, because it's gonna backfire, because you're not gonna have a lot of the answers you need in the conversation. Right. And I'll give you an example. So the revelation conversation is initiated with this question. You would approach a direct report and you would say, would you describe for me from your perspective your job role, what your job entails? And then you go silent. And then what you'll find is that most people will respond with a litany of job functions, right? Those are the bullet points that are on their job description.
Right.
That will comprise perhaps their entire list. And so what you'll do is you'll patiently listen, and especially after you've initiated multiple revelation conversations, it becomes very predictable. You're going to hear a set of job functions. And then, this is key, you don't then chastise them and say, I can't believe everything on your list was a job function. We don't operate in a transactional environment here. What about job essence? What about this single highest priority of your job role? You don't know that? You know, you don't want to do that. But what you do want to do is you want to own it as the immediate supervisor, because they look to you for this information. And if they don't have it, guess what? You haven't shared it with them.
Right,
so then
right.
you own that.
Right.
You say, listen, everything that you mentioned is vital. It's all critical to our success. Because we need, remember, like I said earlier, it's not zero sum, job function or job essence. It's both. Everything you listed is important. But I didn't hear anything on your list pertaining to job essence. And then they're going to say, what's job essence? And you're going to say, well, it's your single highest priority at work. And then they're going to say, what's that? And you're going to say, your single highest priority at work, because you've responded to these four questions in chapter three, your single highest priority at work is to delight a customer, to create a promoter, to surprise and delight every guest, to create a connection with every guest, or whatever it happens to be.
That's where the rubber meets the road. That's the depth of it, right? Because, you know, I'm reminded of the story I read about John Kennedy when they were about to try to launch the first rocket to the moon.
Right.
And he runs across the janitor who is sweeping up the floors, and he said something to the effect of, you know, you do a great job cleaning up the floors. And the janitor said, I don't clean up floors. I'm helping build a rocket. Wow.
Right.
I mean, he saw something bigger, that everything, that every little thing that he did was something much bigger than him. I'm helping send a man to the moon.
Right.
Is what he said. And I was like, when you think about that, when you make that kind of connection, when your employee can make that kind of connection, right? Whatever it is, walking them through this conversation. And you make a point that these conversations have to be one-on-one.
Correct. Yeah, because if it's one on many, then you're being efficient, and that misses the point. Mm. You know, we're talking about effectiveness here. And if you are a credible and a trusted and a respected immediate supervisor, then your direct report is going to value that one-on-one time, even if it's informal. Most of the interactions that direct reports have with their immediate supervisors would be categorized as less frequent and more formal. And the idea behind this is that it is more frequent and less formal. Mm. And like I said, it's going to take 5 minutes or less to initiate that question. They're going to give you a litany of job functions. You're going to take responsibility for that by saying, listen, everything he said is important. I didn't hear anything there about job essence. If that's how you would describe the totality of your job role, then I, your supervisor, have described your job to you incompletely. Because there's this whole other dimension of your job role, which is job essence. They're going to say, what's that? Well, it's your single highest priority at work.
Right.
They're going to say, what's that? And then you fill them in. You have enlightened them. That's why it's called the revelation conversation. Mm. And then you have a very productive conversation about what it is that they can do to fulfill that.
Beautiful. We've been on an hour, Steve. It's gone fast. tell people how they get a hold of you.
Well, they can get a hold of me at my website. Pretty easy to find. It's just my name, Steve Curtin, CURTIN.com.
That's awesome. Thank you, Steve. You've been great. Stay with me. Folks, this is the show. Remember, you're in control of three things: your attitude, your effort, and getting back up again. It doesn't matter what happens in your life. You have control of those things. Take control of them now. I know it may be tough, but get back up, get a good attitude, and give your best. I'm going to be back next week with another great guest. It's going to be another great book. It's going to be another great show. And as they say to you all over, everywhere in the world, thank you so much and ciao, everybody.
It's going to change. You can find the strength to go a different way, yeah. The time has come. Your dreams will take you places you have never been before. Find your passion, find your strength. Don't worry.